God to help rescue God's people who had been conquered and were being oppressed even at that very moment by the Philistines. So God gave Samson some supernatural strength. I mean, these are wonderful stories. And in my view of the scriptures, these are actually stories that did happen. He gave him this potential that is beyond imagination. And the problem is with Samson is the same problem that is like most of us. We have all this God-given potential, and yet we really fail to realize how to make that happen. Are we through self-destructive means destroy God's given potential? See, again and again, Samson just really just made bad decisions. In fact, we summarized his life with just this one statement. And here it is again. Samson was an incredibly strong man with a dangerously weak will. That could summarize his life. By the way, that could summarize my life a lot of times. Just like many of us who have this great God-given potential, yet because of the weakness of our will, we make poor decisions and we end up wasting all that unbelievable potential. So this week, we're going to look at another area of Samson's weak will, and that is something that undermined his great strength. It, by the way, will undermine your strength. It has undermined my strength in his life. So here's the key thought for today, and if you want to write this down, it might be up on the screen. I think that we worked a PowerPoint out this way. Like so many of us, Samson was emotionally driven and not spirit-led. That's a description of his life. For those of us who are followers of Christ, one of our biggest problems is that we should be led by the Spirit of God in all that we do. Just not coming here on Sunday morning, but in every aspect of life. But often, we're guilty of being emotionally driven. We purchase things based on emotion. But immediately, there are some people here who reacted this way. A lot of the guys said, "Hey, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm not emotionally driven. That's not me. We're not emotional at all." Now, my wife, she's emotional, but not me. You see, men, we don't like to think of ourselves as emotional creatures. But the fact of the matter is, we are emotional. Women are emotional, and we're emotional. We think women are weak because they're more emotional than us, but we just express our emotions in different ways. Here's what I know. Men show their emotions much differently than women. And I want you to follow carefully with me on this because we'll see this in the life of Samson. And if we're honest here today, every single guy in here can own up to this. The reality is that we are emotional, but because our emotions are displayed in a different way. Now, I'm not saying that emotions in themselves are all this bad of a thing, but the fact is we are not to let our emotions control us. See, there's different ways that men process their emotions and women process their emotions. It's very differently. Now, here it is. Generally speaking, men act, women talk. Isn't that the truth? Amen? Women love to talk about what's going on. But what men like to do is we don't like to talk about what's going on. Guys, how many times has your wife said, "Talk to me. Tell me what's going on." Huh? When does that happen? It happens in my house quite frequently. Some of you women, if you get upset, here's what happens to you. You might call one of your girlfriends up, one of your church friends up, and you'll say, "Hey, can you come over? I want you to sit on my couch. We're going to drink some tea, and we're going to talk about what's bothering me." Now, in all my years, 53, of being a guy, I've never had a dude call me up and say, "Hey, dude, I want to come over. I want to sit on your couch. I want to drink some tea. I want to talk about what's bothering me." You know what would happen if somebody did that? They'd automatically lose this mystical thing called their man's card. They would. It'd be over. And I have no idea how you would be reinstated to the man club from such an infraction. Now, the problem is, and men, I want you to be really honest, sometimes our emotions are what really gets the best of us. We get led to do something that we probably really shouldn't have done. Now, how many of us are willing to admit that? How many of us guys are just willing to say, you know what? I let my anger get the best of me. I let my pride get the best of me. And the truth is, if we get really wired up, it really doesn't take very much for us to get wired up, fired up, and then fed up. So instead of being spirit-led, guys, let's just be honest about it. We're emotional. We emotionally led. Now, Brian Graham, he's somewhere around here. He may be. Yeah, he's right there. Okay. He's seen me have an episode with my laptop. My cat, Mr. Ruger, has seen me have an episode with my laptop. And I'm very grateful. The church bought me a new laptop, and, you know, I needed it. It's been useful. But because of the mouse pad on it, it's different than my other one. And so when I set at the keyboard, and I've got my fingers on home base. I remember typing all the way back from eighth grade. So I'm typing, and invariably, if my thumbs sort of get drawn down a little bit to hit the spacer bar, it hits the little mouse pad, and that mouse pad will creep up. And somehow, magically, it creeps all the way up to the little red X on the program. So for Mother's Day, I'm sitting there working on a message for moms. Maybe some of you remember it from Ephesians, the fifth chapter, verses 20 down to about 20, 35, I think, or so is where I preached from. But I'm typing away, and I've been going at it for 6 hours. And you know, sitting at a keyboard for 6 hours, pretty good long time. And I had maybe 2 paragraphs done or something like that. But invariably, the awful thing happened. The mouse got drugged up, the little cursor got drugged up to the red X, and bam, bam, it's gone. And all these wonderful, godly thoughts that I had pinned down on my computer were suddenly gone. I'm looking at it, and there's nothing there but the home screen. So I go back, and I try to pull it up. It's gone. Autosave didn't work. Nothing's going on. You know what I did? I started screaming. Because I'm thinking in my mind, I'll never get these thoughts back. All this time that I put in this, it's all gone. And the cat's looking at me. So I start screaming again. And I screamed maybe 5 or 6 times. Louder and louder. And I'm so grateful it was my home office. And Susan, you weren't around when it happened. If I'd been here, it'd been trouble. But it occurred to me after about the 6th scream. What's wrong with me? I'm supposed to be a spirit-led man. Not an emotionally driven person. I'm not really sure about that episode. But I'm going to guess I wasn't being spirit-led when I screamed to the top of my lungs. What it come down to, and let's just be frank about it. I mean, y'all laugh about the little red cursor getting drawn up to the red X, the cursor getting drawn up to the red X. But wasn't it just operator error? That's where the problem come from. See, here's the point. It's a whole lot easier for us if we want to be driven by emotions. You know, we can be led by them, but there's consequences to it. It's a lot more difficult to be led by the Spirit of God. We may have to hold some things in. We may have to hold back on some things. It's a continual choice that we need to do in our daily life, because most of us really don't want to do what's right. But because God has challenged us to be led by His Spirit, we can't let emotions take the best of us. So maybe today you're a dad here. In your heart, you want to be the best dad that you possibly can be. You want to connect to your kids. You want your kids to love you. You want your kids to respect you. You want to be this great role model. And you want your kids to know, man, I work hard all day. But here's what happens to us. Invariably, we have about 10,000 words that we have in our vocabulary for a day. We spend our 10,000 words out in the office or out in the field, wherever that it is that we're employed. And we get home, and we're all spent out. And all we want to do is just veg out. I'm fried. I'm done. There's nothing left in me. So what do? We kick back, and we want to watch TV till 11 o'clock at night. And there's not five words that come out of our mouth. Or maybe you come home and you had a really bad day. It's just not that you're fried, you're wasted, but you had a really bad day. So your wife comes to you and you say something really stupid to her, something awful. What do you do? You think, well, I know I should apologize. I know I really need to apologize. But then something kicks in, and it's called P-R-I-D-E, pride. I'm not going to apologize. See, when we get down to it, guys, anger and pride tells us that we really are emotionally driven. We're not spiritually led. Maybe something happens to you, and you really don't want to expose your anger, but you can't control it. It happens. I'll do it anyway. And we end up like the Apostle Paul talks about in the Romans, the 7th chapter. He says, what it is that I want to do that I do not. The very thing that I should be doing, I'm not doing. And that's just simply because, let's be frank about it, we're emotionally led, we're emotionally driven, not spiritually led. That's why the Apostle Paul said in Galatians, the fifth chapter, verse 16, I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. You know what he's implying there? He's implying if we're going to be led by the Spirit, we're going to be Spirit-led, then we need to do that. And then it's going to take the place of the emotions in our life. We don't need to gratify the desires of our sinful flesh. Here's what happens in verse 17 in that same chapter. For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary to one another, so that you do not do the things that you wish. We regret. We act out, and we regret. I'm guilty. I'm the poster child for that. And because that those times in our life where we're emotionally driven, not spiritually led, we have the same identical problems that Samson has. And we're going to see. I want you to understand that the end of Samson is caused by every single one of his actions. That's where we're going to really wind up at today. So let's pick up the story where we left off last week. And here's where we're at. Samson sees this Philistine woman. You know what, golly, she is something I want. Now, Samson knows this gal worships idols, that he's not supposed to marry her, but he says, I don't care. I don't care what God says. I don't care what my parents say. I don't care what anybody else says. I want her. So they make these wedding arrangements for her. And Samson throws himself this big bachelor party. Isn't it amazing enough that he didn't have friends there with him? They had to get 30 Philistines to come in and be the party guest for this big drunken bash that they're putting together. So why aren't any of the Israelites there? Well, they're not dumb enough to go into a place where they really didn't belong. They're not dumb enough to go into this Philistine's town. They're saying, you know, we're not going to go there. And the people of Israel know, but Samson, thinking because I can handle it, I can do this, I've got some strength, he goes where he shouldn't go. Judges 14th chapter, verse 10 and 11. If you have Judges 14 in front of you, let's read this. Here's what it says. So his father went down to the woman, and Samson gave a feast for the young men used to do. And it so happened, when they saw him, they brought 30 companions to be with him. So during this party, Samson says this to these 30 guys. And you know what? Guys, listen to me. Anytime you mix testosterone with copious amounts of alcohol, it never turns out really ever good, okay? I'm talking copious amounts of alcohol. And lots of testosterone doesn't come out good. So he gets these guys together. He's really thinking, you know, I'm going to show these Philistines some things. I'm smarter than they are. And so I'm going to show them who's smarter. So he gets together with these guys. And he's going to have this little competition. He says, I'm going to tell you a riddle. And you have 7 days to figure this out. And to make it interesting, let's make a little bet on this. And because everybody knows that anytime guys get together, there's beer or wine or whatever involved, then there's got to be a wager involved with it as well. And we're just going to make this a little fun. So he makes this really stupid bet. He says to these 30 guys, hey, I bet you 30 pieces of linen and 30 changes of clothes that I win and you lose. Now, this was a time for the spirit to kick in and tell him, you know what, that's not a good bet, Samson. Because Samson just couldn't go down to Walmart and buy 30 yards of linen, 30 changes of clothes. He didn't have those on him, and we'll find that out later in the story. This was a very expensive bet. It was a stupid bet for Samson, because if he loses, he's got to come up with 30 outfits, and which he doesn't have, and these 30 men lose. They just got to come up with one each. So he says, you know what, I'll give you 7 days to figure it out. Now, down in verse 13, here's the riddle he gives them. Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. Now, we remember from last week how that came about. He was coming back to the woman of Tanath, and he sees this lion. He destroys this lion, comes back a few days later, sees that in the carcass of this lion is this hive of honey or hive of bees, and he reaches in, grabs the honey, gives it to his parents, really totally disregards what he has promised to God that he would not do, not touch anything dead. And he goes ahead and he touches it. He takes that handful of honey and breaks his vow to God over just trying to best some guys in some kind of drunken stupor party. Now, the Philistine men, they think about this. And I'll be honest with you, if you didn't know the backdrop to the story, if I came up to you and said, out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet, what would you say to me? You say, what have you been smoking? I mean, how in the world would you figure that out in the first place? I couldn't begin to figure that one out on my own. I don't think I could. I'd need some help. So that's what these guys say here. You know what? We're not going to figure this out. So they begin to get a little angry. And they don't want to lose this bet because it's going to cost them each an article of clothing and some linen. So they go to the Philistine woman who Samson wants to marry. And they say, you better find out Samson's answer to this riddle. And if you tell us, you better tell us, or not that you don't, you better tell us. If you don't tell us, we're going to burn you and your father to death. Now, I talk about motivation. That's liable to turn anybody's heart. If you don't do what we ask you to do, we're going to kill you. And we're not going to kill you in such a pleasant way. So the riddle to them was obviously no joking matter. Now this bride's desperate. She's thinking, you know what? I just met this guy. I'm not going to die for this guy. Huh? Really? He's just somebody that come along and liked the way I looked. I'm not really ready to die for this guy. And what does she do? She uses a woman's greatest weapon that they have in their arsenal. She cries. Oh, tell me the riddle, Samson. Oh, you don't love me, Samson. And she does this constantly to him. So on the seventh day, he's only got one day left. On that seventh day, he tells her the secret. Then she goes, tells these 30 guys. Let's look in verse 18. So the men of the city said to him on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey and what is stronger than a lion? And he said to them, listen what he said. If you had not plowed with my heifer, that's not a nice compliment about the woman he's going to marry, is it? You would have not solved my riddle. Samson's furious. He's lost a bet. He's got to pay up. And he flies in this rage. Now, men, I want to give you just a couple snapshots here. First of all, not wise to call your significant other a heifer. Don't do that. Don't do that. By the way, don't let anybody else plow with her as well in the field. That's just a little advice. So Samson, what does he do? He reacts with emotion. He's emotionally driven. He's not spiritually led. Specifically, Samson falls victim to two emotions. And I want to show you what happens here. The first one, and we've talked a little bit about it, but let's color the picture in a lot greater here today. The first one, anger. Now look at verse 19. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily. By the way, God gives us strength to do things. God gives us knowledge to do things. And we have choices in life. We can either use them for good or we could use them for evil. Samson was given this great God-given potential. It'd be like somebody with a great voice. You can either use it for God or you can use it for personal gain. It's like somebody with a great skill at craftsmanship, at woodworking, or anything else. You can either use it for God and His glory, or you can use it for your own personal gain. So the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily. He went down the Escalon, and he killed 30 men, took their apparel, gave the change of clothes to those who had explained the riddle. So his anger was aroused, and he went back up to his father's house. Now what happens here? He took the life of 30 innocent men just for their clothing. I mean, we like to think that our culture is so bad today because of the murders, people carjackings, all these different things that go on. What did we just read there? Somebody in a fit of rage kills somebody over their clothes. When Solomon wrote, "There's nothing new under the sun," I'm telling you, God's grace has extended from the very moment that man was created to the very moment that he will wipe man off this earth and start it all over again. That's the fact. See, his anger was aroused. He returned to his father's house. His wife that he wanted now is going to be given to another companion who attended the feast. Now you might say, just wait a minute. Let me tell you what happened here. Samson lost the bet, and he left the wedding before he had completed the wedding. He went on this killing spree. He was so angry, instead of going to finish the wedding, he just went home. Maybe he thought, you know what, I can't show my face. They bested me. I'm not going to show my face. So the bride's father's sitting there, and he's going, you know what, I got all these things going on here. I just went through a wedding. I think if my son-in-law hadn't shown up, I may have tried to pick somebody up and say, "Here you go, Lauren." After you put all that money out there, you don't want to waste a good party. And so he's getting together and he's saying, and I hope Jeff isn't listening to this on the internet. Anyway, he's saying, "You know what? I'm going to give her to another guy because Samson's nowhere to be found." So he finally cools down. He returns back to the bride's house, only to find out that she's married to someone else. So what does Samson do? Well, he calls his best friend up. He goes sit on his sofa, and they drink some tea and coffee, and they talk about it. Well, no, that's not what actually happened. How are men led? They're emotionally led. And he is going to take action. See, women want to talk. But what do? Well, we want to take action. Somebody shames me. Somebody bests me. Somebody cuts me off in traffic. What do? Well, we get angry. So he's letting anger get a hold of him here. He's emotionally driven, not spiritually led. But he's still got this wonderful, amazing, God-given gift of not only strength, but intelligence. Now think about what he does here. He takes 300 foxes. And I've seen some foxes around my day being an outdoorsman. They're cute and cuddly, but they're really not cute and cuddly. They can be very mean. And I would say if you went up to try to pet a fox, you might come back with a bite or two, unless it's totally tame. But somehow, Dan, this guy's smart. He gets 300 foxes together, and he ties their tails together, and he puts torches on their tails, and he turns them loose in the vineyards, the grain fields, and the olive groves of the Philistines. And they just go running around, back and forth, setting everything on fire. The result is that all the fields, the crops, the vineyards, the olive groves, and that whole area were gone. Now let's think about this, anger. Have you ever let anger prompt you to do something? Well, here's what Samson did. Were those local farmers responsible for Samson losing his wife? No. But they were going to pay a price, weren't they? No, they didn't have anything to do with it. But when you're emotionally driven, you know what happens to us? All logic goes out the window. My wife has seen me in those moments. Maybe your wife has seen you in those moments where you allow emotions to get the best of you. And after he allows emotion to get the best of you, it becomes this big, just ugly mess. Because now, not only is he angry, but now the Philistines are angry. So what do? Well, they go get this woman that he's supposed to marry, is now married to somebody else, and take her and her dad, and they kill them and burn them. Now, Samson's former fiance, is his former would-be father-in-law responsible for what happened? No, they're not. Didn't have anything to do with it. But again, the Philistines now are emotionally driven, so all logic goes out the window. Now let's look at verses 7 and 8 in the 15th chapter. Because he's angry, we read his actions again. Samson says this, "Since you've done a thing like this, I will surely take revenge on you, and after that, I will cease." So he attacked him, hip and thigh, with a great slaughter. Then he went down and dwelt in the cleft of the rock of Etam. Now, I want to give you a couple terms here, actually one term and explanation of that term. Now, psychologists have termed this frustration tolerance. They say that mature people have high frustration tolerance. In other words, if you're a mature person, somebody cuts you off in traffic, somebody steps in front of you in line, somebody gets the last piece of chicken at the dinner table. No, that ain't going to happen with you, Justin, right? No, sir. You'll say something like, "Oh, well, okay, that's fine." You know, you'll be somewhat patient. But the other side of that in frustration tolerance is someone that has a low frustration tolerance. They basically say this, "I want it right now, and I'm going to throw a tantrum." It happens. We were down in the grocery store in Hilton Head. Actually, I wasn't with my wife, but she had our son-in-law-to-be and daughter, and we're doing some grocery shopping, picking some things up at the Kroger store. Got a brand new, big, nice, fancy Kroger store there. And another young man that was with our group there was just standing there, and this lady comes through with her shopping cart and just rams right into him, runs over his foot, cuts his ankle, and just goes on. Didn't say boo, didn't she, Brenda? Didn't say boo. And Brenda's looking to this poor kid. He's like 17, 18 years old. I guess he's probably, 20? He's got to be 21, 22, I guess, 22. And he's trying to hold it in. You know, Ethan, Jordan, he's trying to be the man and not cry. But you could see his eyes welling up. You know, it's like getting that hard hit. He got hit hard. He's trying not to cry. You know, what was going on with this lady? Well, I'd say there was some low frustration tolerance there. She wanted what she wanted right now. It didn't matter that she ran over a kid and went on her own little merry way. It's probably a good thing that I wasn't there. Because the low frustration tolerance would have been coming out of me. What does Samson do? Is he high frustration tolerance or is he low? Well, I think it's easy for us to see. Slaughtering innocent people when you get upset. Wouldn't you say that's low? Maliciously destroying their property because you're upset? I'd say that's low. And who gets hurt by Samson's actions? Every time we allow anger to control us, it is ourself and everybody around us. I've cost my wife. I've cost my children. I've cost my parents. I've cost close friends because of my low frustration tolerance. Not willing to be patient. Instead of being spirit-led, Mark Wilson has the dubious distinction of being emotionally led. So here's the challenge for us today. I hope you're honest. For many of us here today, especially for the guys, anger tends to be our default emotion. In other words, we naturally default to the emotion of anger, and when something negative happens, we get mad. We get upset. Somebody embarrasses me. Well, I don't want to feel embarrassed, so I'm either going to embarrass them back, I'm going to show them they don't treat me that way. I'm not supposed to be embarrassed, but we allow anger to get the best of us, and it happens. I remember years and years back, Lord have mercy, it was our first house. Brenda and I were arguing, like a lot of married couple do, young, dumb, stupid. I got mad, and I just went, whoom, I kicked the couch. Not proud of that, but I did. Well, I broke my toe. You know what I did after I kicked the couch? I kicked it with the other foot. I said, "You stupid couch." And you know, it wasn't that couch's fault. But I've seen my wife stub her toe in the morning or late at night. And you know what she does? She'll sit down on whatever she stubbed her foot on, and she'll just sort of nurse it and caress it till it feels better. And she gets up and goes on. Now, which one of you guys are going to be honest that you've never done what I just described there? Huh? Which one of you? Samson really didn't have anything to get angry about. And when you get down to it, we really don't have anything to get angry about. He was mad at the world. And here's what I want you to remember. Most of the messes that he was in, if not all the messes that he was in, it was his own fault. Over the years, as a pastor, as a friend to a lot of different people, I've seen guys angry at the world. I've seen them angry at their job. They'll say things like, "I hate my stupid job." But the reality is, you've probably made some decisions that have cost you along the way, that led you to that job, in that place that you feel that is nowheresville. You've done something that reflected back on your relationship with your boss, and maybe he's limited you, but there's probably some things that you have forgotten that you have ownership in. I've had guys say, "You know what, I'm angry at my wife. I don't want to be around her. She does not meet my physical needs, and you know what, I'm done with her. That's it, it's over." And the fact is, maybe you've not met her emotional needs. Maybe you've not been there for her, to listen to her, and to be as Christ or Paul talks about Christ loving the bride unconditionally. Or maybe you're angry at God. You say, "I'm in a mess. I'm in such a mess. I have all these problems in my life," and you're angry at God. But you can't look back and say, "It's my own fault," because you're in this painful place. See, your pastor or your potential pastor today is speaking to you from own personal experiences. And when I've been emotionally driven through anger, it's cost me big time. Okay? Here's what needs to happen, guys, and gals for that matter. When you're emotionally driven, fact is, it does happen a lot in our life. I've become really good at something in life. That's this: apologizing. "I'm sorry." Now listen, ladies, Maybe your husband's done something. I'm going to challenge him today to go to you to apologize. Maybe he's taken you for granted. Maybe he's not met your emotional needs. Maybe he's done something that he shouldn't have done. Don't you dare look back to him and say, "You're only doing that because Pastor Mark said to do that." Don't do that. If he says he's sorry, or for that matter, if it's the wife saying she's sorry to the husband, you accept that. Because if you don't, then it is on you. That sin is on you. If someone, by God's grace, is moved to apologize, you take it. What I have learned is that I am quick to apologize now. And now that I don't have to apologize as much, because I realize that life's not much fun when I'm emotionally driven. So if they say that they're sorry, you go on. Let's go to the second thing here today. And we'll go through this quickly here at this point. Samson was filled with pride. Verse 15 says, he found a jawbone of a donkey, reached out his hand, took it, killed 1,000 men. Now notice something here. Samson's got this amazing power, this amazing strength, and he defeats 1,000 men. But he doesn't give God the credit. He begins to say some things. Look down at verse 16 in the 15th chapter. Then Samson said, "With the jawbone of a donkey, a heap upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I've slayed 1,000 men." Somehow, Samson gets in his mind, because of pride, it's all him. "Hey, I kicked these guys back to nowhere. I killed 1,000 of them. I made donkeys out of them." Samson is taking credit for what's going on in his life. I've been reading an interesting book from Andrew DeBanco, and it's entitled The Real American Dream. And what he does is he traces in this book the reality of what has happened in America. And I'm going to be talking about that July 6th a little bit in the sermon. But he goes across the country, and he's researching this matter of what has happened to the real American dream. And he's going to different AA meetings across the country. He shows up to one in New York City, and there's a sharply dressed young man in there. And this young man gets up, and he begins to outline all of his problems. And each one of his problems, he's blaming on someone else. He's putting it on someone else. That's their fault. Then he begins to outline all his revenge that he's going to reap back on those who have wronged him. DeBanco was sitting next to the gentleman, a black gentleman, dreadlocks, sunglasses on. He leaned over to DeBanco and he said, "Listen, I used to think that way before I achieved low self-esteem." Now here's what DeBanco said. For him, it was like a bolt of lightning. He'd never considered grace and mercy in that way. Always pride, always arrogance. But he began to realize that we have nothing to be proud about. That it's all dependent upon God in our life. I thought it was an amazing moment in the book, The Real American Dream. Probably say, "Pastor, you don't want low self-esteem." I'm telling you, my friend, you better realize that without God's grace and mercy in your life, you're not going to heaven. And you're certainly not going to make it anywhere in this life as well. Experts say, you know what? You need to have high self-esteem. Here's what I'm saying to you today. You need to have high God esteem. I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me. Yeah, I'm not telling you that you need to have this attitude, "I hate myself, I'm a worm, I'm worthless, I'm a donkey," that kind of thing. No, but you need to be willing to say, "I'm a sinner. And every mess that I am in life right now is my own fault." That means I can't go around getting mad at the world. I can't blame God. I can't blame my wife. I can't blame my boss. I can't blame anybody else on what's going on in my life other than myself. And when you get there, life's going to become so much better. So much better. Let's put up the takeaways today, guys. And we're going to stop there. Let's all stand. I want everyone to look at today's challenges, not takeaways, but challenges. Here's what I'm asking you to do in light of what we've read, what we've looked at today. You need to turn to God and admit, I've been driven by emotions, our anger, our pride. Something has moved you in a way that has cost you. You know what would be great? Be great to hear a couple guys tell me after service, Pastor, I've been emotionally driven, and I'm repenting of that. That'd be great for me to hear today. I've owned up to it in front of maybe 400 or 500 people. I'm not even sure how many's in here today. It looks like a good crowd. All you have to do is admit it to God. Tell Him. You know what He'll do? You might feel you've blown it. God will never accept me. That's so wrong. God stands ready to restore and to provide in such a way that it's like it never, ever happened. That's the God that I serve. His grace and mercy is so abundant, it makes the difference right now and forever. Now, you may still have some consequences you'll deal with from fallout, from things that you've done, but you can start the path to Wellsville. You can start the path to having a better relationship with your wife, with your children. And consequently, if there's a lady here this morning, this I'm describing you, the same is true. You may think I've blown it. You don't know what I've done, Pastor. Listen, God knows what you've done, and He's standing waiting for you to call out to Him. See, that's what happened to Samson. Samson said, you know what? I've done all these things. Then he realized I've blown it. And what did God do? If we read in the story, which we don't have time to read, I'll just point it out this morning. Samson cried out to God, and God gave him water. He restored him. That's what God will do for you today if you're willing to say, I blew it. I've screwed up. It's my fault. Whatever your deepest need is, let God know about it. Let it drive you to God. Christianity is a religion for weak people. Apostle Paul said that he's chosen the weak things of this world to bind the strong and the smart things to confound the wise. Just paraphrasing that. Let's pray. Father, again, we thank you for your love, for your mercy. We thank you for your word, which is able to make us wise into salvation. We pray, Father, that it will go to its intended receiver. And we have this wonderful promise. It will not return void. And we ask these things in Christ's name. Amen. Now, thank you again for your attention.